Hello everyone, I'm Alison Donnelly, a Director of FSCom and a Payment Services Regulation Specialist. I am recording today a version of a webinar that I presented to the members of the Trade Association, AFEP, a couple of weeks ago about the Dear CEO letter and the guidance that was published on the 9th of July. I felt the content was useful and could be of great help to some of our clients in these months as people are working through the guidance. So at that stage, I was asked to take attendees through the issues raised by the FCA and identify the changes that you may find worth making and give it some sort of order in terms of urgency. So I thought it'd be worth at the beginning of this to talk about the context. As you'll know, safeguarding as a rule was implemented in the UK more than 10 years ago when the Payment Services Directive was implemented in 2009. But I'd say that the first real public action for the FSA, as it was at the time, on safeguarding came with the fairly wide-scale de-risking exercise by a bank way back in 2012. And that was because at that stage, the FSA required an attestation from payment and e-money institutions to confirm whether or not that they had accounts and clearly if they were attesting that they didn't have accounts, there had to be follow-up action by the supervision team. Following that, there was a bit of a thematic review of safeguarding in 2015. And by that stage, I'd left the FSA and come to FSCom. So I know that some of my clients were speaking to supervision about their safeguarding procedures, but it was really, as far as I can tell, really mostly just phone conversations and provision of documentation. There was no face-to-face meetings. But then there was a bigger review, which everybody will be aware of because that culminated in the Dear CEO letter that we received last summer. In between, there has been some revisions to the approach document with, shall we say, varying degrees of success. Interestingly, as far as I can see, there's really only been one public censure of any business because of safeguarding, and that was Horne Express in 2013. For the 2 years that it was operational as an authorised payment institution, it did not segregate or have a safeguarding account at all, and its punishment was a fine of £138,000+. But the fine was actually waived because of financial hardship on part of the business, and it subsequently went out of business. I raised that because I know that the question of whether the FCA will actually intend to do anything following up from this new guidance will be uppermost in some businesses' minds, and it's something that no doubt every compliance officer will have to address in discussing these issues with their CEO and the board. So what we're looking at today is the output from a brief consultation on temporary guidance that was issued back in May, and also the follow-up from the FCA's business priority plan, which was referenced April 2020. And in there, they put a priority that stated that consumers were at risk in the payment sector, and they wanted to assess that and understand that better and take action where necessary. There are three documents to be interested in. The feedback statement and the finalised guidance are, of course, can be read as one document. That guidance is temporary, but I think we can assume that even though there will be a further consultation at the end of the year or beginning of next year, for longer term guidance, it would take a significant shift in the FCA's thinking to roll back on anything that's in the guidance. So we'll turn first to the Dear CEO letter, and it contains six areas about which it's concerned, expresses the FCA's concern in six areas, plus also there's a reference to Brexit for good measure. The scene is set that they're concerned both because the sector is growing anyway, but also specifically because of the circumstances that have been brought about because of the pandemic and the economic crisis. And there's a reminder in there that application of the principles for businesses from August last year increases their ability to apply disciplinary sanction. And we raised that as a point, and you'll remember that from summer last year. So we'll start at the top here and looking at safeguarding first. They have said that they're going to do further work to test firms' safeguarding arrangements, and because they're still finding issues with safeguarding arrangements, which will come as no surprise to the sector. We will look at the specific guidance on safeguarding in more detail through the session, so I'll just hold off on that for now. Prudential risk management is, of course, similar because it's mentioned again in the finalised guidance. But again, here they find that firms haven't calculated their own funds correctly, and others have had inadequate risk controls. Financial crime then is the third issue that's mentioned. The supervision team, specific to the AML sector, has been actively reviewing payments firms, and I'm quite surprised that it's encompassed a review of as many as 100 firms to date. 100 firms are in that review process, and they find gaps in business-wide AML risk assessment, and specifically customer risk assessment. They find poor enhanced due diligence measures being undertaken and inadequate oversight of agents. And they said that targeted assessments will continue. Financial promotions and consumer communications has been an issue where the FDA they've raised it on a number of occasions, and specifically that's been well flagged up most recently in the summer of last year as part of the DRCO. Sorry, not as part of the DRCO, as part of the application of the principles for businesses, because there were specific rules put in place about financial promotions for payment and e-money institutions. And the letter says that they have been doing proactive review of financial promotions. And again, I can confirm that on behalf of some of the clients that I've been dealing with. They have identified problems with claims about the service and pricing that cannot be substantiated. They're saying that they see examples where the FCA's regulatory status is being used in a promotional way. And to be fair, I do see that a lot. They're saying that there's inappropriate use of the term secure, inappropriate use of the term free when describing costs and charges related to currency conversion and presenting the business as if it were a bank. I think we're probably well aware of those kind of issues as well. The next one then on the DRCO letter was a section on governance and oversight. And this is a reminder of your responsibility to ensure that your business meets its regulatory obligations. They call out that they find many firms that do not review their regulated processes sufficiently frequently to ensure that they remain compliant as the business changes or grows. There's an example in there about anticipating and being prepared for IT failures and cyber risk. And there's a point about the requirement that people who decide the direction of the business and make material management decisions should be based in the UK head office. Again, none of those issues are particularly new, but I think the fact is that they have, the supervision team have identified them as particular issues in this sector. And also they're just reminding you, this is what we're looking for and this is what we're expecting. The next section there is on record management and reporting. They have found inaccuracies in the regulatory reporting and that firms are not keeping records that show that they have met their regulatory obligations. Whether that really means that they just haven't met their obligations or that they have, but they haven't documented it. But it was ultimately, if you can't prove that you have met your obligations, then effectively you haven't. And so whilst I said they've got the six issues, they've also identified and taken the opportunity to mention Brexit. And there's recognition that in here that it wouldn't be great if payment and e-money institutions just stopped serving their existing client base, their existing EEA client base, when the transitional period at the end of the year runs out. So they're saying you do need to have an action plan, and that action might have to be taken in a sort of nuanced way, depending on the jurisdiction in which you find yourself. But I think from a lot of firms here ask us the question, do we need to do something different because of Brexit? You know, can we continue to service our existing client base? We haven't approached them, they have approached us, we have a relationship. What do we need to do? And I think this is the FCA saying, yes, you very much definitely need to consider how you're going to tackle that at the end of the year, by the end of the year. The letter then concludes with the expectation that it will be discussed at your board and that an action plan will be agreed. So the questions for you are, what is your recommendation to the board? How are you going to manage this? Who will conduct the gap analysis? How quickly can it be done? The temporary new guidance, I have identified 15 topics, as it were, and I've split them into groups. I've got a group of ones that I'm calling the sort of chunky challenges, and these are the things that I think most firms will have to start from scratch. Now, not all firms, but most firms. I then move on to talk about the changes that I think are probably really just refining changes, so things that firms will maybe be already aware of as problems, issues that they need to just check and fix, and that shouldn't take too long. And then I have a list of actions that are very specific to the circumstances and will depend on, it won't apply to everybody. And so here you'll see, perhaps be pleased to see that I've only identified four that are really what I would regard as being the chunky changes. The first one is the annual audit of the safeguarding measures, and every e-money institution will have to have an annual audit of their compliance with safeguarding arrangements. This is in addition to the fact that they have to have a statutory audit of their financial services, their finances. It's a specific safeguarding. It can be carried out by the financial auditor or a consultant, an external consultant, who has sufficient knowledge and expertise in safeguarding arrangements. I would say that, you know, I've been with FSCom for 7 years. Through that period, we've always talked about safeguarding arrangements and offered safeguarding audits. It's really been only in the past year that we have had maybe even a handful of clients ask for safeguarding audits. And I think that's a reflection of the fact that people are reticent and concerned to come forward to get a safeguarding audit. And I can understand that, because safeguarding is so difficult to meet that there will always be findings and fairly significant findings in a safeguarding audit. Here the FCA is saying you have to have a safeguarding audit, and we remind you that where you identify breaches that are material and significant, or something that we would expect to be made aware of, you must let us know about them. So that's safeguarding. The next thing that I've identified here is the governance and controls, and I put this in the chunky section because I think, you know, whilst we're all much more familiar with identifying operational and security risks because of the requirement to report at least annually through the REPA 1.8, the regular review of systems and controls and compliance audits, again, like safeguarding audits, are not being done frequently, in contrast to the AML audits, which every payment and new money institution knows that they need to do at least annually. And that's been driven by banks as almost the regulator in this area. They're requiring that firms need to do an audit, understand what the areas of weaknesses are, and figure out ways of remediating. That hasn't been standard practice when it comes to regulatory compliance. And the FCA is saying, you need to, how is a board of directors, can you assure yourself, satisfy yourself, that you've got sufficient systems and controls in place, unless you take the step of checking it and verifying it? So that's the question to be posed to your board. The third one then I've identified is stress testing. Now, this was flagged in the FCA's financial adequacy consultation last year and has been confirmed in the finalised guidance that was issued in June. And just in case there's any confusion, that's separate to the information that was specifically targeted to payment and new money institutions. That's a sort of FCA-wide response, and that comes under the name of FG20/1. At that stage, it was flagged that there should be stress testing, and this has been confirmed in the temporary guidance. So at least annually, stress testing, which has to be approved by the senior management, and you may need to do stress testing more often than once a year, depending on circumstances. And then the fourth and last thing on the chunky changes is the wind down plans. There is guidance that's applicable to all firms now that are under PRIN for wind down plans. When it was first issued, it was not specifically for payment and e-money institutions, but of course, with the addition of the application of the payment of the principles for businesses last summer, that now becomes applicable to payment and e-money institutions. And this guidance goes further and says, we expect you to have a wind down plan. We did a workshop for our clients a few weeks ago, which is available on our resources on our website. It takes you through the process of working through a wind down plan. In our experience with a couple of clients so far, and with our partners who've been doing this in the Netherlands with a large number of the payment and e-money institution sector there, wind down plans take roughly 3 weeks to pull together. They involve a significant amount of input from stakeholders across the business. We're looking at being able to identify the thresholds at which the firm should take action, because the business looks like it might need to wind down. Not that it definitely will, but that business is going in the direction that wind down measures should certainly be looked at, or indeed measures will need to be taken to move it out of the wind down phase. And then the indicators, the point at which wind down has to happen and in order to be able to do it with least disruption to consumers and least harm to consumers. So four chunky changes that need to be made as a result of the finalised guidance. And so to the areas that I think are more the simpler changes that need to be made. The first one here is about reconciliation, rationale and procedure and breach notifications. This was identified last summer as an issue where firms were not reconciling frequently enough and didn't have a procedure to show how it had to be done. That now needs to be documented, or at least it should always have been documented. The FCA is now stating specifically that they expect that to be done. The intention here is to make it straightforward and simple for an administrator to come in. When they come in, they need to be able to see how the procedure happens so that they know what information to gather, who to speak to, where the documentation sits. So that should be covered in the reconciliation rationale and procedure. And the rationale is about how often you reconcile during the day. So at least once a business day, but more often if it's practicable, as often as possible. So if you're only going to do it once in a day, you need to be able to explain why. The more most controversial aspect, I think, of the guidance was the letter in which it was put forward that Payment and E-Money Institutions act almost as trustees. They have funds held in trust for their customers. I'm not going to go into the logic behind it and the issues that were raised, but it's important to point out that there is a template letter at the back of the guidance. As a payment and e-money institution, you're expected to make sure that your banking partner who provides you with your safeguarding accounts acknowledges, if not on that particular letter, essentially the clear points in the letter. And if you don't want to use the letter, you don't have to, but you still need to be able to satisfy yourself that all the points are addressed. And so if you're thinking of deviating from the letter, it's strongly recommended that you take legal advice to show that you have done proper due diligence on that. There's a reminder in there, should it be necessary, which is hard to understand that it should after all this time, but you need to segregate. So that quite often what happens is when we speak to payment and e-money institutions, they assume that the safeguarding only starts at the point at the end of the business day following the day of the receipt, when the funds have to go into what I call a special safeguarding account. That's definitely part of safeguarding, but this process starts right at the beginning on receipt of the funds, when the funds, client's funds, should be segregated from all other funds held by the company. So a reminder to segregate. There's also a point in here about selecting, appointing and reviewing the third parties. And these are either the banks where you hold the safeguarding accounts, or perhaps the providers of the low risk secure liquid assets, or the insurance providers. And I know this one particularly takes many payment and e-money institutions to the fair, because they say, well, you know, I can review it every year, but really my assessment changes nothing because this is the only provider who's going to give me the safeguarding protections that I need in order to fulfill my regulatory obligations. Nonetheless, the FCA wants to see this done at least annually and as often as necessary. So, you know, if there's some bad news about the partner that you've used to safeguard, then you need to do a risk assessment, understand what the risks are, identify if there are any alternatives, and you know, the senior management need to take responsibility for that decision, and it should go up right up to the board of directors. Unallocated funds is perhaps a win here for payment and e-money institutions. Under the consultation, the FCA has said if you get funds in that you can't identify as belonging to any particular customer, you need to set them aside in a separate set of accounts. Of course, that would mean that it's not just one GBP account. It would need to probably be a set of accounts that could be used in all the various currencies, sitting there waiting to receive funds if such funds happen to arise, which would have been a sort of costly burden on payment and e-money institutions. They've rolled back on that. They said that if you're certain that the funds are more than likely to be for payment services or in exchange for e-money, you can include them in your safeguarding account and just make sure it's noted that that is an unallocated, an unidentified client as yet, but that you're working very hard to find the client, but you're confident that it does reflect payment services, relevant funds that should be in the safeguarding process and account. The next one then is disclosure on safeguarding. The FCA have given some examples here. They said that firms seem to imply that customer protections arising from safeguarding extend to firms' non-regulated business, so perhaps where they do other types of business, that somehow the wording just might lead customers to believe that the whole shebang is protected because it's all under the regulated entity. That's clearly not allowed. And they have identified firms that imply that on the firm's insolvency, the customer's claims for the repayment of their funds would be paid in priority to an insolvency practitioner's costs, which arise from distributing the safeguarding funds. I believe comes from a very, very recent example of a firm that has gone into administration, and I understand that there are a lot of costs being incurred during the process of returning the funds to the customers. And of course, that is diminishing the pot of funds that are available. So, if you're talking about safeguarding in your website or in any material for customers, you need to make clear that there will be this priority given. That is disclosure and safeguarding. And so then the last one here in the refining changes category is about liquidity, risk management, and access to credit. So as part of your risk management process, you need to actually check that the credit you think you can get in certain circumstances where you need extra liquidity is actually available to you. And I think that might be to the extent of, if you've got if you think you will rely on an overdraft, for instance, are the procedures in place in order for you to be able to access that credit? I don't think that's an overly complicated one. And I would expect those firms will have already got that in place, but a good reminder, just in case that isn't the case, that you must do that. So those are the refining changes. Let's move on to the ones that are more specific for certain circumstances. And the first one there is about when safeguarding obligation starts. When we were all looking at the new guidance on safeguarding, we all wondered, will this be the opportunity that the FCA takes to clarify when the safeguarding obligation ends? But in fact, all that they've mentioned is when safeguarding obligation starts. And this is specific for those firms that have take money from customers, their e-money institutions, they take money from customers by card or some other transaction payment instrument, which involves a delay. Because the e-money regulations allow those firms to not safeguard until the funds are received, albeit they have to do that within 5 business days. But it could leave a situation where the funds are not received from the customers, they're not in the safeguarding account, but the customer spends the money and therefore that money is being deducted from the synchronic account. And of course, they're not deducting the funds that represent the money that they paid in, they're taking somebody else's money in effect. So there's a reminder that that shouldn't be happening. There's also information here for small payment institutions. They of course don't have an obligation to safeguard, but the FCA is saying we strongly think that we should. And certainly, even if you don't safeguard on a voluntary basis, you should very definitely have enough paperwork, enough records in order to allow anybody, an administrator coming in, to identify what funds might belong to customers and where they're being held, and how that could be allowed for an orderly transition back to the customers. And then the third and fourth changes are relevant if your business is part of a wider group, and they reflect the consultation version, which had that intragroup receivables shouldn't be used against capital adequacy unless it's absolutely certain that they can be, that they're not to be relied on, and the same with intragroup liquidity facilities. So if you're in a situation that you do rely on other partners in your group for liquidity or indeed the receivables to go against your capital requirement, then you need to take a special look at whether that resources can be relied upon and justify it if you are going to continue doing it, because the FCA is saying whilst this is best practice to not include it, it's best practice, it's not a rule, and so it leaves the door open for you to be able to go and say we think we should be able to do this, but you need to have your ducks in a row to be able to argue why that is indeed the case. And so what's the next step? Well, as I already mentioned, there's very definitely an expectation here that this will be discussed at board. And of course, if you're discussing it at board, you really definitely want to be making sure that that's minuted as your evidence. You will have to be conduct a gap analysis of against all those elements that I've mentioned and how your firm meets them or doesn't meet them. Where are the things that need to be changed? And then prioritise the changes. And I would say that there will be some in there that are quick wins, but what you need to do is prioritise according to consumer harm. Next step after that is then to draft your action plan with appropriate time frame and resources allocated. That needs to be robust. There's no point putting in there a commitment to change it all in the next couple of weeks if you're not going to be able to meet it. But then again, we wouldn't expect that this is something that just keeps rolling out. This is temporary guidance because the very specific circumstances of the coronavirus and the economic recession, that in itself hints at the urgency in which this should be undertaken. And then, of course, you roll it out and you keep in reporting back to the board, and at the right time you need to be able to test that the systems that you put in place to meet those new obligations are slightly reworded and reworked obligations are good for what you're expecting them to do, that they're sufficient, and that should all be reported back to the board very clearly. The FCA wants to see that the people who are at the top of the business, whose responsibility this is to make sure that they're meeting their regulatory obligations, that those people actually understand what their obligations are and are indeed interested and all over the detail of this. And at FSCOM, we like to leave with a takeaway, the key points for you to identify. I think that's probably on the previous slide in terms of making sure that you are aware of what the gaps are and that you have a plan to address them. But in this slide, I think the thing to address is, does the FCA really mean business on this? It's a question that's always put to us. You will be very well aware that the FCA's supervision to date has been somewhat more based on speaking to a few firms. They haven't, by any stretch of the imagination, met every single payment and e-money institution out there. So, how likely is it that you will receive any kind of feedback, request for information to evidence that you have done this? Well, there's a few things that make me think that the FCA will follow up on this. Those things are, and of course, I totally get that you will think that it's in my interest to say this, but I think the point is that with the economic crisis, there is very definitely a heightened awareness that firms will go out of business. And, you know, some of those consumers, I think the Wirecard situation has again highlighted that some of the people who are using e-money payment institutions are the most vulnerable in society. It's the full range of people in society, but of course, focus has to be paid on those who are using their e-money accounts to be able to meet day-to-day commitments. And if they're not able to do that because the business has gone bust, then that is a significant detriment to them and their family. We mentioned maybe 2 years ago that the payment supervision team has been increased, and the resources have been allocated to it have been increased, and that's really important. I think it's finally a recognition in the FCA that, you know, if you don't have payment services happening properly, actually there is no financial services sector to regulate. It is all reliant on the payments being made safely, carefully. It's the rails that allow the things to go around and the pipes. So the supervision team has been had increased capacity, but actually there's now also what's a pilot, but it's a rapid response team, and so that's more people brought in who are specifically looking at the potential requirements and safeguarding of payment and e-money institutions. And you may well have already had questions from this team in particular asking about your regulatory returns and any discrepancies that they find in the reporting returns. I think we need to be mindful that throughout the safeguarding story, we have always said that this all has to be tested at the court. And I think Super Capital, the firm that went into insolvency fairly recently, is the test of safeguarding. It is the court making judgments, and that was quoted. The judge was quoted in the finalised guidance that the FCA has presented, or at least in the statement that went alongside it. And so we're very mindful that this is all being played out on the scene at the moment, and there will be more changes because of that. And I think it's important to point out that safeguarding is not new. It's an obligation that's been in place for 10 years at least. So firms should be aware of what their obligations are. They shouldn't be, you know, there's no excuse for saying, oh, well, we didn't really understand. You know, there has been plenty of communication. And I think it's important to note the difference that in this communication, there is no attestation required, but there was last year. And why the difference? Because it would be easy to include an attestation requirement along with it this year. I think that's a sign that perhaps there's a feeling in the FCA that they did the attestation last year and it didn't really materially change firms' approach, and therefore they're going to have to use something more more face-to-face, more invasive, more questioning for this round, and I think that's very important. It's also perhaps worth noting that the FCA is one of the few regulators who has put guidance out there for firms on safeguarding, but it's not the only one. And then the regulator in Lithuania has been particularly proactive in the past year. Four e-money institutions were fined for failings in safeguarding, and indeed they put time and effort into the study of safeguarding and its efficiency as a consumer protection measure, and have actually put a report out to the European Commission saying that they think it should be done differently. They think that there should be some kind of centralised guarantee, as there is with the deposit guarantee scheme. And so that is the my analysis of the Dear CEO letter and the accompanying guidance. We're very keen to hear from you. If you have any questions, we're happy to speak to you about our reflection on the Dear CEO letter, what it might mean for your business, and indeed, of course, how we could help you meet your requirements and satisfy the FCA that you have taken every step that you need to take in order to meet the obligations. Please do feel free to contact us if you would like to talk it through with us further. Thank you.